And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Alexander Gunas, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by our intrepid co-host, my intrepid co-host, James.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write for Code Switch, and I'm a ghost today.
Yes. Just for a brief heads up for everybody, James is working on besting a cold, so he is going to be here, and he's going to be chiming in when he can, but expect it to be a little bit less than typical. However, it's not going to be a episode with less content than usual, because I'm joined, as always, by, not always, but by Paizo's wonderful senior developer, Jessica Catalan. Wow, I'm batting zero today. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm good. How are you? Good.
Can I call you Jess, or do you prefer Jessica?
Either way.
All right, cool. Jessica, it's been a long time since you've been on the show with us.
Yes, it has been many years.
Yeah, we were trying to like figure it out in the pre-show, and it's got to have been at least three, right?
At least it was the first one or two seasons of Starfinder.
It would be between 3 and 4.
That's a lot of stuff. And I feel like we're in this magical time right now where like Starfinder core rulebook is out, our alien core is out, right? GM core is out, player core, everything. We just got the trifecta of a Starfinder amazement. We've got the Absalom book. And so like, or not the Absalom book, the Galaxy Guide. The Absalom book just got announced, right? Am I crazy? I think I'm crazy.
Well, I mean, if you say it, I'm gonna assume that somebody will
tell me. That's fair. I don't know. Maybe I have no idea anymore. Time is an illusion. For all of the listeners and anybody joining us live, I got a new job in January, and my head is kind of like spinning. I'm not really sure where I am or what I'm doing anymore. So maybe there's an Absalom Station book. I don't know. Seems logical to me. I do know for a fact that Galactic Ancestries comes out next month. That one's penciled in our schedule.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. So Cryptwalker 76, there was an Absalom book announced. It's not a fever dream of mine. Okay. Thank you so much. Somebody also, Oyman, your boy man in chat wants to know, Jessica, how is it carrying Starfinder Society 2nd edition on your back?
Ooh, you know what? Let's not say heavy. Let's say light as a feather.
let's say 5 bulk. All right. So obviously by this
shorter
point,
every year.
Right. So I guess at this point, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Gen Con is typically the point where like the new season typically kicks off, right? Yeah. Is that still true? So
that is true in 2nd edition. Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's true, then that means like we're pretty close to like, you know, the point like in an anime where the first core is over and then the second core starts, but the second core always starts with like going over a recap of what was in the last core in case you forgot during the mid-season break. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Mid-season recap.
I feel like that's where we're at right now. Like, we need a mid-season recap of Starfinder Society, right?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So tell me, how many of my favorite faction leaders from 1st edition are still around?
So in 2nd edition, we don't have factions anymore.
What?
Those characters, who's not playing my game, sir? So those characters are still around, definitely. But we don't actually have factions anymore. We made a lot of changes going into 2nd edition with Starfinder Society in terms of wanting to make getting into organized play as simple and easy as possible. So you will find a lot of those extra things that were only organized play things. We have cut down on as many of those as possible so that as long as you have a player core or you know the rules from online and you show up with a character or not, you can just hop into a game and play. So now, you will see lots of fun faces, but we don't technically have factions anymore.
Okay, that's probably good because, you know, like whenever you see the Starfinder Society or even the way back, like however many thousands of years in the past, those pesky Pathfinders, whenever they're talking about it, it's always like, you know, like, yeah, and in the organized play, they talk about the factions, but like in the books, it's always they just talk about the society as a whole, usually. So that's probably for the best. You mentioned that like most of the barriers and like most of the society specific rules are gone. Are there any that are still around?
I mean, you'll still get a chronicle sheet at the end, which is specific to organized play. We use simplified XP system, right? Same as Pathfinder mm-hmm. Society does, so that you know whatever campaign you're in, you get XP, you level up so many times, mm-hmm. so that it feels the same. So there are some things that we keep between the two. Each scenario is written for two levels. So you'll find a level 1 to 2 scenario or a 3 to 4. So you can play as long as you're one of those two levels. But we don't have, so it's, broader, right, than what we expect mm-hmm. if you're doing a regular, print line adventure, but also it's, less than it used to be, right? We used to have 4 mm-hmm. per scenario.
Yeah.
Something like that.
What's the highest level bracket nowadays?
So for Starfinder Society, the campaign itself goes to 10. We are, for second edition, it's hard cap at 10 the whole time. You can make a character at level 1 or 3 or 5 or 7. You do not have to start at 1 and play all the way through. We've also got pre-gens for all those levels. So when you see like a level 5 to 6 adventure you want to play, even if you've never played before, or if your character's already played that one, so you want to play it with somebody different or anything like that, just to fill the table or something, you can just hop right in, right, with a new character.
That's pretty cool. So like if my boyfriend has been playing for like the entire season and I decided I wanted to jump in and he's already level 5, I don't have to wait and make him make a new character to play with him?
Nope, you just make level 5 and hop right in, or you get one of our pregens.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Are there pregens for all the classes that are currently out, the typical stuff?
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite pregen?
I really, really like Solarians. I like to make a solar weapon and just go punch you in the face with it. And occasionally explode. So,
and the fact that it's day of all characters has nothing to do with it.
yeah. So I like that a lot. My daughter would say that Ice of the Operative is the best because she is a huge Operative fan. So
nice. In chat, Lava Being wants to know if the pre-gen characters are available at all the level brackets you said. It's like all the starting levels.
1, 3, 5, and 7. Not at level 9, because if we have a level 9 to 10 highest level we do adventure, you do have to level up at least from 7 to get there. So you can't jump in on one of like, we would do that for like end of a meta plot if it's a higher level meta plot kind of thing, or a higher level standalone. So not at 9 we don't, but all the other levels, yes.
I mean, it's something you would do, but haven't done yet, right? Because I mean, like the meta plot can't be at the end now. We're at the mid season.
We are. We have. Oh gosh, what month is it? What scenario just came out? I want to say 17 and 18 just came out. So this year total, we're gonna have about 26 scenarios, and of the 26 total, 16 of them are meta plot scenarios. So we have a very long, involved meta plot ongoing. So every scenario is standalone, but some of them connect, right? We've got some 2-part scenarios or 3-part scenarios, but our meta plot is like the big one. So that's 16. We have, oh goodness, 1, 2, how many do we have in it? I think 6 or 7. No, we got more than that. 8 of them at least so far.
That's a lot.
Yeah, we've got lots.
I did notice when I was looking through these society scenario catalog, because I was going to run some for some friends, that so many of them were meta plots, and I feel like it's a higher percentage than it used to be.
It is. In the first year, right, if you did Scoured Stars, Scoured Stars had a very high percentage of meta plot compared to the others. And in the following years, we went a little lower and a little lower, right, because we wanted to get more kind of standalone stories, and we kind of shrunk it. And I mean, last season of first edition, for example, Metaplot was 3 scenarios, right? Mm-hmm. Because we wanted to tie up as many first edition ongoing plot lines we could. So we really shrunk our Metaplot, right? Mm-hmm. But with the launch to second edition, most of us on the team, like me especially, I played Scoured Stars. Thurston was in charge at the time, right? He made Scoured Stars. Jenny's done Scout. Like, so many of us really loved that. How in the beginning of first edition, there was a lot of meta plot. Even though you could play everything standalone, there was lots of little connections or even things that spun off in totally different things because you met one NPC at that one time. And that was really something we wanted to do coming forward into second edition again, is we wanted to shine a spotlight on the meta plot, do something meta plot heavy, right? Not all of the meta plot scenarios that are marked meta plot are directly in there. Some of them are just like before, right? How you would meet a character and then here's a side mission with that one. It's technically still meta plot because you just met them, but you don't really have to play that in the sequence kind of thing. But yeah, we have a big investment in meta plot this year, which was really fun to go back to, right? Because that's when you're doing 16 plus, we had a special launch adventure as well. Like, that's a lot of entries kind of in the story. You get to do a lot more.
That's awesome. Now, one thing that's being discussed in chat, they're talking about replayability. Are all the society scenarios replayable in second
edition? Every single one. If you play it with a different character or apply your GM credit to a different character, that's totally fine. But you can play over and over again, every single one.
That's amazing. That's I mean, like back in the day, they used to have the replayable ones that kind of like went out of their way to try and like have randomized elements to try to make them replayable. But I also think that a lot of those ended up kind of feeling a little patchwork. So I'm kind of happy to see that it's just like, yo, we trust you. Don't be a jerk and ruin everybody else's fun.
Yeah, exactly. Especially since when you have so few replayable scenarios, then everybody's playing those 5, 10, 15, 20 times with every single character they have. So you sometimes get those experience where someone at the table played it so much, like they know this thing like the back of their hand. They could, right? Like, I mean, I have certainly played some old Pathfinder Society ones that much, right? It's in there. But like when they're all replayable, it's a bit more balanced, hopefully, right? Like, you don't have to play this one scenario over and over to get that character to the next level, right? Because you can make it any level, but also any of them, right? Play your favorites, play different ones, come back to one 3 years later when you've forgotten what happened, right?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up because we had Mike Kimmel on the show last month, and Mike Kimmel wrote Gallows of Madness, which is one of James and my favorite Pathfinder first edition adventures. It's a great adventure, don't get me wrong, but the big reason is that it was split into three components and each part was worth a whole level. So you could skip level one by playing any one of these. And so literally James and I and a bunch of our friends had this weekend where we were at a con and not enough people showed up for a bunch of the scenarios to fire, so we literally all took turns playing these three components of Gallows of Madness. We got at least five characters to like level two or three just running this one adventure nonstop. So I'm kind of I hear what you're saying, and I agree that that's probably not the ideal way to consume content.
I mean, as long as everyone at the table is having fun.
That's true. We did have fun.
One player who doesn't know what's going on, and everybody else will be just speedrunning.
Yeah. It also allows you to probably gather some good information, right? Because you get to see what scenario gets played over and over again.
Yes, you can.
We have a lot of chats going on. I think there's a scenario coming out about gnomes, right? Is that part of the second core of season one?
Gnomes, they are talking about Pathfinder Society.
Oh, they're talking about Pathfinder Society.
But unless they're talking, are they talking about an adventure? Or are they talking about
gnome liberation? Ancestry? I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm confused. There's a lot of chat. There's a lot of chatter about gnomes in chat right now for anybody who is listening to the podcast later. But James and I are always live on Twitch. So if you ever want to see what kind of weird things get talked about in our Twitch chat, like the gnome liberation that Shanwolf is apparently running, stop by twitch.tv/nodirection. Maybe next time we'll talk about the great dwarf uprising. I don't know. But you know, there was an uprising in Starfinder second edition, right? Polaris. Yeah.
Sorry.
I now correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding, we're talking to Mike last month and just kind of reading the rule book, it sounds like your work in Starfinder Society played a pretty big role in that story and that setting change. Yeah,
it did. When we were making the switch to second edition, it was really fun as a team to get to go back and look at all of the adventure paths, all of the Starfinder Society seasons, all of those little standalone adventures. We did three or four scenarios in Polaris that had, sorry, not Polaris.
Did I say Polonus. It wrong? Polonus, I'm sorry.
No. Columbus, yeah.
Oh, so that's why I said the planet name and you looked like I was like saying something completely out of left field as I was.
Real talk, it's also because my son's favorite stuffed animal, sorry, all of his friends, if you ever see this, is named Polaris.
Mm.
So you said Polonus, and I was like, why are we talking about a stuffed bear? I heard you wrong, and then it, yeah. No, it's not a stuffed bear.
It's a stuffed cat.
Yeah, so we did quite a few adventures on there. On Polonus, helping the Patra. So that's one of those ones that it's really nice to get to see when we all hit the room and we went, what kind of stories do we want to see? Like, what were the outcomes? What do we want to show on screen? And the last season for first edition, right, we did a lot of those big changes. We did them literally on screen, like blowing up Octurn was a society scenario, right? You could be there and run for your life. All kinds of cool stuff like that. So it was really nice to get to have everyone like figure out what is the canon thing we want? How do we want this to have gone for them? And that was a really fun one. But like all the Pact Worlds, all the most people have a kind of a sector or, you know, a couple planets that are like their favorites. So, you know, there was lots of fun in the little side ones and little places out in the vast and stuff too.
Now, do you have one that's your favorite?
I'm a big fan of, in most media, like dystopian style things. So I love Akaton. I love, cyberpunk themed things. I love, I just drew a blank.
Dystopia. All right.
Not naming that planet. Diaspora, which is the other thing I really like.
Nice. Now,
there we go. Sorry. It was going to bug me.
No, you're good. I get you. I know that feeling. Now, one question that popped up in chat is obviously, like, this level of collaboration between organized play being, you know, you and all of your scenarios, and also, like, the general direction of the Starfinder story is something that, like, we definitely didn't see in first edition, and it's pretty cool to see, honestly. As a matter of fact, when we had Mike on the show last month, he flat out called, correct me if I get the quote wrong, James, but I believe the quote was, he said that, like, the story of Starfinder Society is the major story we're looking to tell in Pathfinder and Starfinder 2nd Edition.
Something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, it was something like that. So with that, Lava being in chat asks, does your team plan on working with the adventure team to include like boons for organized play for non-scenario adventures, kind of like what we saw in Pathfinder First Edition and Starfinder First Edition? Is it like because you guys are more of the like focus of the story? Is it like, those are just side things that you've done?
So do any org play season adventures tie into non-scenario adventures?
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah.
Yes. In short form, yes. Mm-hmm. There are characters we've already had in some print adventures who you will see, or some events that have happened in those whose after effects are also happening in organized play mm-hmm. now. We might not necessarily wave a giant flag and say, hey, this thing. But yes, there is interplay between the two of them. There are things that are happening in Starfinder Society that affect the campaign setting, basically every season, right? If you've read Galaxy Guide and you read the section on the Wreck of the Returned, that's literally the thing we're exploring right now in Starfinder Society. Like, the things we're exploring are things in our hardcover books, things that intersect with our regular adventures, and vice versa, right? They affect each other. And each season, by the time we hit the end, it should have done something, right? When you finish an adventure path, when you finish an organized play meta plot season, you should have done something impactful that has changed something in the system, something on the planet, something in the, maybe even setting wide, right? So that's something that we are working in regularly all through second edition. When we were writing Galaxy Guide, right, when we were brainstorming what are the biggest stories that we want to tell in this edition, that's the stuff we put in Galaxy Guide. And for every single one of those, it wasn't this is the Starfinder one, right? This is, you can have that one. It was, which of these stories is the best to tell as an adventure path, as a standalone adventure, as an organized play scenario? Like, if it needs a lot of space, it's probably an organized play scenario season, right? What's a meta plot? What's just a single adventure, right? Mm. So a lot of those things that we're doing this year, like Mike said, we put out so many society scenarios and so consistently that it is, for second edition, it is our primary vector for adventure releases, right? Mm. And then obviously we love all of our print adventures. So we have our, Guilt of the Grave World and other adventures and adventure paths. But yeah, no, Starfinder Society has partly the most, but also we are also doing those kind of big impactful stories, which, yes, wasn't always true in first edition for Starfinder Society. We were doing those things, right? Scoured Stars is a very impactful thing, but it doesn't mean it was always represented across lines, right? And because we're a much smaller team and everyone on the team has a lot of experience with organized play, a lot of respect for organized play, it was really important for all of us that we kind of integrated and stayed on the same page as much as possible.
Interesting. You know, it's been a while since I've done like a big written adventure for Pathfinder, but back when I was doing a lot of those, like definitely among the freelancer community, there was kind of this sense that like, wow, I get to write an adventure path volume. I'm leaving my mark and my imprint on the scenario. And now it seems like, you know, you could do that maybe even to an even greater extent here in organized play. Do you foresee a future where everyone's like, wow, I need to get me one of these scenarios so I can make a major contribution to the meta plot story of Starfinder second edition?
Wouldn't that be fun?
I guess we have to wait and see what the meta plot is and what it resolves and does before we see how much the freelancers start scrambling for the bit at your scenarios, huh?
So next season, obviously, we work so far in advance. Right now, we're doing first season, we're doing Invasion's Edge, and it has big, big ending. But, I mean, I've already assigned the first eight scenarios for the second year already, right?
Wow.
So, going into the next season, right, next year, which is not announced yet or anything, it is also a very big, impactful season with lots of secrets. We get to kind of dig into some things we don't normally dig into. And for that one, I wanted to, exactly for the if you've worked on adventure paths or you've worked on hardcover books, you'll know that you get the outline for the entire project, not just your little section, right? Yeah. And that you'll probably be in a Discord chat or something with lots of other people on the same book, so you can kind of work with other freelancers and things. And in Starfinder Society and organized play, that has not been a thing, just because we release so many so quickly and you only get the one you're working on. You don't need everything else, right?
Yeah.
But I found that, well, for two reasons. First, I spend so much time trying to, in a big meta plot, you spend so much time trying to parcel out exactly what one person knows and not give spoilers for other things, which is really hard. And it takes a lot of time, right? Mm-hmm. But also, you lack that kind of community cross-scenario collaboration when you should be able to have it, right? So for our second season, I gave the full meta plot the treatment in an outline as if it was an adventure path. Oh. All of it outlined at the same time, so that when I hire a freelancer, they can see the full story, not just the little silo they're working on. And also we can do things like have a Discord for all the people who are working on meta plot for second year, right? Mm-hmm. So they can kind of talk. And if there's, you know, a stat block that somebody will need to reuse later, I can just put it in there, right? Once it's developed, kind of thing.
Wow.
So we are also taking steps to like kind of do more of that community, making you feel when you're writing a society scenario that you're not quite as isolated, right? Whereas with when you're doing those kinds of adventure work, it's a very different experience than when you're doing like a rule book that has 30 different people on it, right? Like those feel different. So when you're sitting at home writing alone, you know, it was kind of a nice thing to try to do this year to see if we could kind of fit it in, right? Like, because that's more front loading work for me, but at the same time, it has the potential to be something helpful, kind of like on multiple levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still remember when we did Drift Hackers, how cool it was to have that community there. So it's pretty cool to see that in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very cool. So I mean, right now, I think that's something that a lot of there's one or two freelancers in chat who are listening, and now all of them are sending you emails. So enjoy. You're gonna have work tomorrow.
That's you.
Yeah. So I guess with that, we've talked a little bit about, like, you've name dropped the name of the current season. Give us, like, the rundown. Like, where do we find the Starfinder Society, like, at the start of this season? And without giving us too many spoilers, like, where are we going into the new scenarios that are coming out? I believe it's at the end of this month, right? Like, or no, it's the end of February, so it'd be next month in March.
Yeah. So this year we are doing Invasion's Edge. So this is kind of a year about exploration and discovery amid a mysterious alien starship that's on the planet Akaton. So at the end of last edition, I'm going to back into the past here for a second. At the end of last edition, we were investigating doing a survey on an Abalonian First Ones city. So they're ancient, mysterious beings nobody knows anything about, but they made life on this planet, robot life. So we were kind of just exploring that. And through those explorations, as part of our meta plot at the end of first edition, we learned all kinds of cool things about the First Ones, but we also clashed with a cult, basically, that was trying to call them back. And at the end of the season, we defeated them, but they did release a call, and we ended the year, and therefore the edition, knowing that something received it and it's coming. And because we had learned so much about the First Ones, one of the primary things we learned is they were not good people. So this is bad. So in the start of second edition, in Galaxy Guide, and then at the very start of this edition, a big, massive alien starship has appeared out of nowhere in Akaton's upper atmosphere. It's come careening toward the planet, like, so fast it's going to crack it in half. And then it just suddenly slowed and then crashed into the Sloughscar Hills. So curious explorers and opportunistic salvagers have kind of descended on this mysterious wreck. But within hours, the wreck's automated defenses activated, and it drove out all these explorers, unleashed dangerous monsters and magical effects kind of into the region. This starship was dubbed the Wreck of the Returned. Mm-hmm. And then the discoveries that came out of those initial first investigations led First Seeker Sarmak, who leads the Starfinder Society, to believe that the Wreck of the Returned had a connection to the First Ones, and that it was actually the first step in an invasion of the Pact Worlds. But something had clearly gone wrong. So Sarmak has, at the beginning of the season, in our first scenario, he has established a Starfinder Lodge in the surrounding Sloughscar Hills, and he's kind of put out of a call for brave Starfinders who want to help out, who want to help establish and defend this new fledgling lodge, but also, we need to get and explore the wreck, right? So throughout this season, you can start the meta plot through there. Number one, one is Invasion's Edge. Which is a really great, also a great on-ramp scenario for new players. It was intentionally designed to kind of build skills on skills for brand new players, since it was the very first one we released, but it's still a full fun adventure. Or you can play number 10, Collision's Wake, which is special. It's a 4-hour long adventure, not 2 or 3 like the rest of our scenarios of the year are. And that one you play pre-gens, but you play the first mercenaries who ever went into the wreck. Right, but you're the ones who triggered the thing that sent all the stuff spilling out. You know, my bad. So you can jump in on that, or you can jump in on this. But the Collision's Wake serves as kind of a prequel to the season, but it also includes some characters and foreshadowing that if you do play it, it gives you Easter eggs as you're playing the rest of the season, right? Characters in that who are side characters you get to meet show up as other characters later on in the season. So it's kind of got some foreshadowing and some Easter eggs that we kind of pay off throughout the year, which was really fun to do.
See, thinking out loud, hearing this, my brain just kind of fired. James ran Dead Sons for a bunch of us, and I feel like I could be wrong, but there's the big scary thing at the end of book 6 that you find. Isn't that something that was made by the First Ones? Am I wrong? Am I crazy?
We have foreshadowed the First Ones and their impending return in multiple things and little bitty Easter eggy parts. Also, if you play Dawn of Flame, there's connections to the First One in that. We've got Anasites and Avalon. We've got Planishars. protocytes. Like, there's lots of little places that we've seeded them. So it was definitely one of the things when we were doing the switch over that we're like, okay, well, what's the next step in the story? I mean, they're coming, right? Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So we have foreshadowed they're coming quite a few times in first edition.
That's bad then, because the thing that's at the end of Dead Sons is bad. The thing is in Dead Sons is why the adventure path is called Dead Sons. That's not good.
And you know what? You know, at the end, that was a lot of fun. And the season 7, the last first edition metaplot, is getting to see how much information can we give out about the first ones and really kind of foreshadow, like, how many ways can I tell you this is bad?
Yeah.
But like in really subtle, fun, engaging ways as a play without like beating you over the head with it, right? It was a lot of fun. And it's
Dead Sons. I only needed that one.
And it was really fun coming into this now and going, okay, or if you played first edition, you will have clues, you'll have hints, you'll know things, right? Yeah. But if you don't, that's fine. A starship crashed and bad stuff came out, guys. We got to go in and figure it out, right? Yeah, like, it's a very user-friendly kind of new player-friendly.
And now, this is the adventure that comes out next month in March, right? The adventure path? The going into the wreckage part.
We've already kind of gone into the wreckage. So Collision's Wake is our first thing we released way back at Gen Con. 1-1, it was our launch scenario. And then in the time since then, we have made friends with allies, because obviously you're not the only ones who want to explore the wreck, right? So we've done some diplomacy thing, we've made teammates, we've explored kind of side wreckage. There have been many forces that have come out of the Wreck of the Returned, right? And they kind of fall into two major factions. There are these kind of Magitek robots who directly, literally came out of the wreck, right? So you fight these kinds of things throughout. But there's also local people who have started following the wreck, right? Or whatever is at the heart of it, right? And they're led by somebody called the Functionary. So we also have a lot of interaction with like the Functionary's forces and things like that throughout the season. This month, I believe, which one comes out this month? 17 and 18, I believe, come out this month.
Mm-hmm.
So 17 is standalone adventure, which is super fun and involving the corpse fleet. But 18 is Midnights in Morrow, which is a takes place in this kind of like this constantly twilight big city on Akaton. It's in like this canyon, so it only gets sunlight for part of the day, and the city goes up the canyon walls and it's lit by neon lights and all kinds of things like that. And you are looking for someone who we have mentioned in the prequel adventure way back in 1-0, who has some information you need, but you're not the only one trying to find her. So it is very much like a very different from some of the other meta plot this year where you're going into ruins or you're out in the desert or something, right? This one's very much like an urban, you're trying to track someone down, you're doing investigating, you're dramatic rescues, all kinds of fun stuff like that. Coming out next month.
I do love being a good urban adventure. One thing that really piqued my interest is when you mentioned that we make a whole bunch of friends and allies, because friends and allies means new ancestries. Does Starfinder Society give us new ancestries? Because I remember back in the day how crazy the community went over like the Morlamaws and the Easel Goons and the bug people. I don't remember who we honestly really committed war crimes against.
You did.
Oh, I think all of your friends did, James.
Yeah, all
I
my
think.
Friends. We were the good ones.
So at the start of this season, we released a Invasion's Edge Player's Guide. The Invasion's Edge Player's Guide functions firstly as a quick start guide for getting into organized play. It has basic details on literally everything you need. What is organized play? What is the Starfinder Society? Where are some links for me to click to figure things out, right? How do I make a character, right? Like, things uh-huh. like that. It's just super streamlined, everything you need. It's also got setting information setting up Invasion's Edge, so you can just read this two paragraphs and know exactly what you're getting into this year. It foreshadows a couple other big stories we knew we were going to start exploring with a scenario here or there in some kind of like other adventure stuff. And then it gives you character options. It gives you a whole bunch of new backgrounds specific to Starfinder Society, including things named after those old factions we don't have anymore. So you can take the data file background, right? Some nice fun throwbacks and stuff like that. And then it's also got two brand new ancestries. So we gave it out for free at the start of the year. You can still download it for free now. And it has, this one has Ikeshti in it and Shogads, which are both native to Akathon, so they interact with our meta plot.
Makes sense.
So we have the rule content. And then in each scenario, at the end of it, you'll have a chronicle sheet. And every single scenario comes with a new thing for a player. It will almost always be an item. Very rarely it will be a spell or something like that. You will meet new ancestries and things in Starfinder Society for sure. And you will get, when the rules come out, you can assume they will be through Starfinder Society. But that's too big to put at the back of a chronicle sheet, right? So you won't get that from adventure. You would get that from like a player's guide at the start of the year, or maybe a special download we do, you know, to celebrate something after you've done so many missions in that region kind of thing. We did right from launch have a really fun first contact style scenario, which was it was a bit different, right? Because we've done lots of first contact style things, but number 1 and 2, Mystery of the Frozen Moon, is a really fun one to give a shot if those are the kind of adventures that you like.
I see. I'm a little disappointed to hear that you're not going to give me a 10-page chronicle sheet to put at the end of my character just so I had a new ancestry, though.
You know, that might be a bit much for me to put in and also cram in there. They do actually take time to write.
Just make Dustin do it, it'll be fine.
And then I need art. See, where's this budget coming from?
Oh, that's
I don't think
that's
harrowing. Can swing three new ones also in addition to Player's Guide New Ancestries.
you just go into like the whatever book it is that the Player's Guide, and you just like take pictures of the pages and just put them just these little itty bitty unusable like horrible like screenshot.
It'll be my scribble drawing of a new ancestry. I gave it to you, look.
That's so funny. So does the Starfinder Society still cycle through First Seekers based on like the current mission of the Society, or have you had the same First Seeker for a while?
It's usually every 4 years we select, we put out, when you hit a certain level in organized play, if your character's got enough, we give you basically, hey, email us details on your really cool high level Starfinder. And then every 4 years we do basically an election. So we internally will go through all of the characters who've been submitted by players and pick out, say, 4, usually is a good number, that represent different types of characters who will work for, you know, the season, who are not blatantly ripoffs of other pop culture. So can't pick everybody. But and then we'll make an adventure that introduces those characters to you through play. And basically you get to meet all these ones, and each one will have a different platform, basically the thing that they most want to explore or do. And then we have a public voting. So we originally started with Luazi Alcibo, was our first seeker way back in first edition, who had taken over from Jed Nura. And then the first public election we did elected First Seeker Ehu Hadith, who brought us lots of exploration in different places and things like that. And then at season 6 in number 66, Tomorrow Seekers, I believe it was, we met the 4 new candidates and then had a public election. And the winner was First Seeker Sarmak. And they have been, their first year in charge was season 7. And then they have continued to be our First Seeker and will be for a few more years for sure. It's interesting to see, though, how that changed our direction, because every one of those candidates that I pull, right, I need to know that they will have the potential to lead us someplace. So you'll obviously tell me what their, you know, my character likes, I don't know, asteroids, and they like to race in junk races. Cool. But I need to, ahead of time, know what kind of meta plot I would tell with that character, right? So if you play Tomorrow's Seekers, there's four different ones. Every single one of those, I had to go, okay, this is what meta plot this would eventually lead us to. And First Seeker Sarmak's things he cared about were ancient civilizations with very advanced technology and very large places, because he was a large Izalgun, so he liked big spaces. So mega structures and things like that. So when we were doing that, that very first scenario with him involves mention of the first ones. And the meta plot we went into for that last year was the first ones, because it directly tied into the First Seeker's storyline, right? So in, you know, alternate reality, if we had gone with a different one, we would not be doing for this first year First Ones, right? We would have put something else in Galaxy Guide to be that thing, and probably First Ones would have been something we would have done maybe later on, or in another venue, or in another type of print product, right? But because that very much shaped where we were going, right? If we had had one of the other ones win, I already know what storyline that would have been, right? And that would have been the one that would be bringing us in, that we would have foreshadowed, that we would have set up already, kind of thing. So it very much did chart kind of our course going forward, right?
Huh. So you're saying that in the future, not only are you voting for like the leader you want to lead you, but the kind of story you want for the campaign. That's really interesting. Yeah. That's a really interesting insight. That does make me kind of sad though, to hear that James's high level envoy is automatically disqualified. Poor Hatsune Miku.
Mitsuko Hana, you got it wrong. It's fine. I took tour buses through scenarios. Okay. I had my fun.
That was the greatest. We had this adventure where like the whole point was like trekking across like a frigid ice planet, and James spent all of his money at that level buying a tour bus instead of like good armor or weapons.
Because I was a pacifist, I didn't shoot anybody. So we just had a hover bus, and the GM was very confused, but he was very polite about it.
Yeah. See, now you have a lot of people in chat who are like dying to know what other characters season one would have looked like, but obviously you can't tell them that because those storylines are still on the table.
Exactly. I mean, those characters who were candidates are still characters. I put them in the scenario. They're a part of Starfinder canon. So one of them, for example, was Dr. Heldon Savale, and he was very much into making medicinals, making healthcare free throughout the galaxy, finding and cataloging alien species so that we could have better information on all these kinds of weird alien proteins and all that kind of stuff, weird plants, all kinds of things you can do with them, right? That character has shown up in this season already, right? And they are, oh goodness, they have at least two more cameos throughout the season, because when that point comes and I need someone who can do something like that, what a wonderful character to bring in, right? So we'll still get a touch of them going forward. Another one was Nikiti, who was really into weird, magical, strange things. And she's kind of a diviner, and could tell the future. So she was really fun to include, because I can drop hints for things that are literally the future. I know the future, right? As far as Starfinder is concerned.
So it was really
fun to get to put in the most obscure things that can later come true, right? And to also take their plot, for example, we will see them again. And the story that we would have done, we are still going to get a chance to do. We've already kind of started laying the groundwork. I think I've already assigned the first scenario that will kind of lead into that kind of thing. So it won't be a meta plot, right? But it will be a multi-adventure series. So like, we'll still get some of the stories, but certainly not on the same scale, right?
Mm. Yeah. So that brings me to another question. Back in James and my heyday, when we were doing a lot of society stuff, it was forever ago. Thirsty was still a developer instead of being like Mona's right hand or whatever he is now.
Mr. Important. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Important. And, back at the time, he used to talk about, I have a 5-year plan for Starfinder Society. I'm sticking to the 5-year plan. Do you have a 5-year plan, Jessica?
like, we have a many year plan. I don't know if it's five exactly. Season two, I said I'm already assigning season three. I already know where we're going. Season four. Yeah.
Jessica's like, there are many years in the plan.
There are many years, right? Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's maybe a selling point of Starfinder, and I guess Paizo as a whole, just organized play, is that it is a very responsive campaign. Like, it's a lot of content, which is, I think if you are in the sphere and you go outside of it, you don't realize how spoiled you are.
Yeah.
Gosh. Listen, I play a dragon game that people could probably guess with some friends, and my poor GM, there's like maybe five adventures and like maybe one a year. Like, I just keep telling him, like, man, you don't know how like spoiled you'd be if you just went to Paizo. They would like feed you adventures on grapes while you lounged back in your gaming chair.
Yeah, you will not keep up. You can't.
It's impossible to keep up.
You can't. You can try, though. I invite you to.
Like my groups are still working through back matter from the original Pathfinder.
Yep.
And it's been years.
Most certainly have adventures on my shelf that have not been played. Many of them.
Yeah. Definitely.
They'll get done eventually.
All right, so here's the big question. Are you ready? Ready? Mm-hmm. I'm going to do to you what every Starfinder Society player character does to their initial, the guy who gives them the quest at the beginning of the adventure, right? Mm-hmm. Every group I've ever seen does this to their GM and to their adventure captain. What questions haven't I asked you that I should ask you?
What questions haven't you? Let me think. You should ask about... Man, I should have warned you. I'm bad at ad-libbing.
No. So the answer is none. I should come prepared with all the
questions. You should ask me anything you can think of. You should ask me...
Are there any themes in Starfinder Society that you would really like to explore that you haven't been able to explore yet?
That's a high concept question.
I'm gonna say no, because you know what's really nice about being the only person in Starfinder Society? I get to do whatever I want.
Listen, I was telling you,
if I want to do the thing, I just do the thing.
Such power.
Listen, I was telling James earlier that, like, through a series of unfortunate events, I'm doing two people's jobs at my work, right, my new job right now, and it's very stressful, but man oh man, I get to do whatever I want in terms of like laying the groundwork and how I want the program to be run, and it's like, oh, this is nice. This part is nice. The part where I come home exhausted, but the part where I'm in charge.
Yep, there sure is a whole lot. It is a lot, but I do get to do whatever I want.
Do you have a favorite Starfinder Society NPC that has not been in a Starfinder Society adventure this year?
I love Fitch. Fitch of the Wayfinders. I love that old granny rat folk. Hit me with it. They will be in an upcoming scenario, which I can't say what it is, but it is longer than typical, and it will be out at Gen Con next year, so that is very exciting. I also, oh my gosh, there's so many. I love Ziggy also. I haven't had a really great place to work Ziggy in as like main star in a scenario. Firstly, because one of the things I got to do making the switch over right between editions is go, where are all these characters, right? And you know what? I'm sorry. Ziggy needed a vacation. Let's be real. Ziggy and Salita needed to go have a vacation, take some time. Ziggy really went through it. all the first edition. Yeah. They needed time off. So now they're going to come back, and I'm finding a good place to put them in where it's not just me shoehorning them in just because I want to see them.
We have a lot of,
they've got to be important, you know.
Yeah, we have a lot of fans in chat who are screaming for different characters. People want to know about Arvin, people want to know about Ziggy, people want to know about the other one that I see Luwazi. Here, Luwazi. Yeah.
Oh, I love Luwazi. Luwazi, we will have a chance to see, not this first season and not I don't think second either, but we do want to get back into those things that really mattered to those characters, like Jed, Nora, and Luwazi. You know, they've got touches on the Scoured Stars. Luwazi actually is in, I'm not crazy, Guilt of the Grave World.
Hmm.
Anybody wants to see a cameo?
Oh, I'll have to reread that. I don't remember.
Maybe I'm crazy. I'm pretty sure I'm not.
It's okay. I'm probably crazy too. You know, one of your coworkers keeps spamming like an apple emoji as like the one that he wants back.
You want more dad back?
Listen, you. I'm sure you know which.
Back in like season six.
I'm sure you know. If Dash came back, would it be like a Hannibal Lecter situation where they're just locked in a prison cell and you go to visit them in jail? Like that's got to be the only thing that it is, right?
I like Dash so much, but no, I think somebody would throw apples at me if I brought Dash back again without severe intent, which is what I brought them back for last time. But I saw somebody calling out for more Arvin. I love Arvin. Arvin's the greatest. They are obviously your low-level friendly venture captain for everything low-level for you newbie Starfinders. We did talk a bit about their family history at the season six.
Hmm.
And I would like to do more with that. I believe in season two, we have a scenario that starts near Arvin's house. Because, like, just something's going down in his neighborhood. He's like, come on, guys. Help.
What?
Just go do this thing for me. Don't ask.
Do me a solid.
Can I make a request for an NPC that we don't have to see again?
Yes.
I really don't like the Kasatha in Scoured Stars. The one that you find in, like, the middle of the planet meditating. Like, the first seeker who went missing and then just does nothing. I don't... He's not Jed one Nura. Of my favorites. Yeah, Jed Nura. I don't like Jed Nura. That man can go away. All the other ones are great.
You mean the first seeker before Luwazi?
We had a fun season. The very last adventure of first edition for Starfinder Society had Jed Nura inviting you to come witness this very fun, totally not dangerous event in the Scoured Stars. And we got Thurston to write it. And I was like, Thurston, just go ham. Literally do whatever you want. Whatever Scoured Stars thing you want to pull back for this, do weird hit me. And he did just the most ridiculous thing. If you haven't played it, you should play it. The boon at the end is very impactful.
Is it a first edition boon or is it a second
edition? It is a first edition boon, but it has an effect on second edition.
Oh.
And if you've played it, you'll know why. And it was really, really fun. Also, I got to foreshadow at the end, there's a scene that has like glimpses of the future. But we don't tell you it's glimpses of the future, but you should be able to guess. But so it was really fun get to be like, oh, I'm going to foreshadow this and have some Wreck of the Returned and have this thing I'm not going to tell you about that's in season two and have this thing that I'm going to do in like season four and like just spit so many things out you in like little glimpses and stuff. It was a lot of fun.
This is a spicy question. It makes sense. Lava Being Chat says, do you have a Grandmaster Torch figure, someone you want to force on the community despite the community loathing them?
How can you hate
now,
Torch?
That is a debatable. Now, some people would say that sometimes Torch maybe had something important to say, but
I'm very Torch neutral. I thought it was weird that he kept wanting to meet me in the bathtub, but other than that, like, cool, I guess. And then he went bad and I was like, all right, cool.
I don't think there's anyone that I would force on if everybody clearly loathed them, because I mean, we want a villain, for example, to really make you want to hate them. That's good, right? If you can show a bitten apple at someone and they'll be like, God damn it, I hate Dash. That's perfect. We want that. Like, perfect. But when it's an ally, right? Like, if everybody hated Ziggy, I mean, okay, I'm gonna hear, right? I am in touch with the community. I will hear and not cram them down your throat all the time. But, you know, Ziggy can do no wrong, so we're fine. But
Would you ever consider
I don't think I would cram it down there. We are, especially Pathfinder and Starfinder Society both, but obviously I can only speak for Starfinder, are very responsive, right? Like we were saying before, right? Mm-hmm. Every time your, you know, GM hits the end and they fill out those little reporting boxes and they let me know what happened at the end of a scenario, I do get to see all that, right? Like, if so-and-so died, we get to know, right? So we want to see what you do in a scenario. And we do check the message boards and we do hear the community thing. And we do touch base with people, right? Like, we want to see what adventures you loved best and what adventures you didn't like. And then if you didn't like them, I want to know why you didn't like them, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's a character that just needled everybody and they hated it, then I, you know, those are the things I want to know, right? So that we can go back to those places people loved and then we can, you know, step away a little bit from those things they didn't, right? And we've had really, really great response to basically all our scenarios this year. We only have a single one, which was delightful, that does not have literally excellent reviews. And it's because it's very short, right? Because I needed to take the time to figure out what is too high, like what's too long to fit in the time slot and what's too short to fit in the time slot. Because we were going down to a 2 to 3 hour scenario. So literally one of them, I was like, I think it's too short, but it's so great. And that is the only one because the feedback came and it's like too short. And I'm like, I knew it. But you know, like I found the bumpers early, right?
Good.
Yeah, and literally all of the comments are just, it's great and it's too short. I'm like, yep, okay. We found the boundaries, right? Like I was trying to hit them early, right? Mm-hmm. But like all the other scenarios, including even that one, like we've got such good feedback from them, you know. It's nice to see what are people's favorites, especially when you can replay them lots, right?
Yeah. We're coming up on time here.
I got one. I will contend Grandmaster Torch is maybe a character that you can only get in a society environment. It's like a character throughout their wrestling career, where it's somebody that you've met, their role has changed throughout time. Like the last scenario you do with Torch is like an 18th level scenario that has a hard mode. It is a very impactful scenario for somebody who came into society late and only knew him as the weird bathtub guy. It was so satisfying to have a conclusion to that story after that change. It's like watching like the Undertaker's career or something. It's like it's something that could only exist in this format.
Yes, exactly.
Nice. So like we're coming up on the end of our interviews. Has there ever been any data that you've gotten from these end of scenario checklists that surprised you?
Yeah. There was a scenario in, oh goodness, season 5. I'm gonna call it now. We're going with my gut. Season 5, mm-hmm. where a fragment of the first world has taken root in Akaton and it like sparked this big planar bloom. It was during the Drift Crisis. Mm-hmm. And it formed like this really verdant forest and everything, this jungle, and then you're like, we gotta go check this out, right? Like, important. So you go check it out, and everybody in this town you go to is just real chill, and everybody's having a good time, and you meet these two warring gangs, and they're having like a wrap-off, and you're like, what is going on? And it's just weird, right? And then you head into the forest and all kinds of spoilery things, but In the end, you're fighting the bad guy. You know they're the bad guy. You know they're doing bad things. But because there are so many different things at stake and things on the line, and they try to negotiate with you, right? Like, oh, I'll stop this thing in exchange for this thing, right? And that was one of the ones where I didn't know if people were going to fight this person, which probably objectively the thing you should do, right? Mm-hmm. But, or were they going to take their first deal, which is really a bad deal for you, really bad? Or were they going to try to do like this weird compromise thing, which still has you give up more than you would normally see in this kind of thing, right? Like you're still clearly getting the bad deal, mm-hmm. right? And there are things they will not budge on. And I was really expecting more people to just punch them in the face. And no, it came back with like, really like Because you're not just dealing with this, you're also trying to figure out what to do about this location too, right? So like, it was really interesting to see how many groups tried to walk that middle line of like, we want to keep this verdant thing because it's really good for the planet, but also maybe stop that weird stuff that's going on in that town. And then also, yeah, I guess you can stay and we won't punch you, but here's kind of the bargain we made. Like, it was, there was lots of things to kind of try to weigh in that. And I was really surprised at how it came out. Like, it was, people put in the work. And it's not often you see like they're willing to take a bad compromise, but they worked for it, and it was really surprising.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're here at the end of our interview. So is there any shout outs you'd like to make to anything?
Yeah, come play Starfinder Society. Also play Pathfinder Society because they're pretty great too. And shout out to literally the entire Starfinder team. We are a very small team and everybody is working hard to make you cool stuff all the time.
Is there anybody on the Starfinder team you think we should interview next? I mean, I think we have Galactic Ancestries coming up soon, but who do you think we should ask if they
want to come on? Oh, we just talked to Mike. You should talk to Dustin.
Dustin, you think you want to talk to us about Galactic Ancestries? Well, maybe. We'll see. Well,
he's right there. Ask him. Come on. Hey, Dustin, you don't want to work with these people, right?
Dustin, should I ask Rue if you can come on and play with us? Knock, knock, knock. Hey, Paizo, can Dustin come out to play? Oh, he doesn't even give me a hard time. He just says yes. Okay, well, I believe next month is Galactic Ancestry, so we'll see. Maybe we'll have some Galactic Ancestry stuff involving a certain Squawks. Until next time, go beyond with no direction.